Okay, Chevra. We have been learning the halachos of sitting in a sukkah. And what we pointed out last week is that there are halachos of beautifying not the mitzvah of the cheft of the sukkah, but beautifying the mitzvah of yeshivas hasukkah. Part of the mitzvah of yeshivas hasukkah that we discussed is that I'm supposed to do all of my activities in the sukkah, meaning when I learn Torah, I also do that in the sukkah. However, the Gemara has a contradiction about whether learning Torah is in the sukkah or outside the sukkah. So my answer is, well, it depends on whether you're learning Iyun or Bikiyos. And then there is Machlok Sin Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hananel about how to understand that. Let's begin. I think we may have touched on this Gemara last week a bit, but let's just begin from three lines from the top here on Chavtas Amud Aleph. Amar Rava, money mishtayi b'matalta, money michla bar mimatalta. That Rava says that the containers that you use to drink, those stay in the sukkah. But money michla, the containers that are used to eat, so those go outside of the sukkah. Rashi learned that the basic issue is, are these containers dirty or are they not dirty? Right? That a drinking vessel is not dirty. People use the same drinking vessel again and again, but a dirty plate is dirty. And therefore, because the dirty plate is dirty, you should not leave it inside the sukkah. Right? Rashi writes basically that the issue at hand is whether it is ma'os or not. Tosfos, however, had a different explanation. Tosfos said that the idea is that those containers, which I use to prepare food, so just like at home, I don't use my food preparation containers in the dining room. I use them in the sukkah. I use them, excuse me, in the kitchen. So also by the sukkah, the containers I use to prepare the food, that should be outside of the sukkah. That's the way Tosfos learned. Chatzpah v'shachel. Right. What is chatzpah? What's shachel? I need someone to speak. So look at Rashi. Rashi says chatzpah is an earthenware keli, and the shachel is a dlisho eitz, is a wooden bucket that you use to draw water. So chatzpah v'shachel bamer metalta. These things have to be outside of the sukkah. Now, according to Rashi, the idea of earthenware being outside the sukkah is that it's disgusting. An earthenware keli that's been used and reused a few times begins to look yucky. So that's why it's outside of the sukkah. The shachel, though, sounds a little more like Tisus. The shachel is a container that I use to draw water from the well. Right, drawing water from the well is not a in-home activity, so that's why it is outside of the sukkah. For Rashi, you're going to have to say that the shachel is talking about a dirty container that was used to draw water, as opposed to Tosfos will say that the shachel is even a clean water drawing container. Presumably, the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. So I'm trying to say some, the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos probably relates to how I understand chatzpah and shachel. According to Rashi, they both have to be dirty, and that's why they're outside the sukkah. According to Tosfos, even they're clean, they don't have to be in the sukkah because they are outdoor containers. Vishraga, a candle, b'metalta. The candle goes in the sukkah. V'amrila b'metalta. Others say outside the sukkah. V'lo pliki, habasukah gedola, habasukah katana. There's no machlokes because one is talking about a little sukkah and one is talking about a big sukkah. Now, what's the problem with having a candle in a little sukkah? You should not have a candle in a little sukkah, but you can have a candle in the big sukkah.
You'll start fire accidentally.
What, Jasmine?
You'll just accidentally light your sukkah on fire if it's too small.
Right, you'll light the sukkah on fire if it's too small. That's exactly what Taisa says. If I have a small sukkah and I have a candle in it, So the possibility is that the sukkah is going to burn down. Based on this, the Mishnah Berurah writes that the definition of small sukkah for these purposes is not the usual definition of seven tefachim by seven tefachim, but rather it's just any sukkah that's so small that the candle might light it on fire. That's what Tysus learned. Dr. Lang, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, how are you, Rabbi Schwartz?
Thank God, I'm doing well.
Excellent. Is this saying you don't leave it there when you're not there, or you don't bring one at all?
So the impression that you get is that you do not bring it at all.
Okay.
You don't bring a candle at all, but you're not bringing a candle at all, even though if it's a small sukkah, even though the candle is something that you will, that you'll be using at this point, it does not go on the sukkah. Unlike the plates, which according to Rashi are not in the sukkah only when I'm not using the plate. If I am using the plate, then the plate is in the sukkah. But the candle is not in the sukkah when it is not being used, when it is being used also. The candle is not going to sukkah even when it is being used. Just give me 1 second. I want to cool down my room a little bit. It is hot these days. I don't know if you've noticed.
Warm, yeah.
So who said warm instead of hot? Was that like a Canadian understatement?
Yes, but I also lived in Florida and I spent a summer once in Las Vegas. So I just, I'm the most annoying person to talk to about weather that exists.
Okay, that's good to know. But basically what the Gemara says is that the candle cannot be in the sukkah if it's a small sukkah. But Rashi has a chiddush in understanding the candle. What does Rashi say? And the point I'm making now is a point that Rebbe Yoshev made in his notes on the Gemara.
We weren't sure if that last word is kerosene or not, or what that last word was in the Rashi.
The machine was getting too noisy. Well, sure. What's the point that Rashi is making?
We weren't sure what the last word in the Rashi was.
So, coming kreisel. Kreisel is an old French word for candle.
Ah. Okay.
Right? I mean, you're my French expert. But kreisel's
word. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But the point is that Rashi makes a point of saying that we're talking about ner shel cheres.
Yeah.
That we just noted that the definition for Rashi, most of the sugya is about dirty, disgusting yuckiness. Cheres, once it's been used already, is dirty and disgusting and yucky and should not be reused. But that's the halacha in Hilchos Chanukah, that I can't use a cheres container for my neiros Chanukah once it's been used already because it's really disgusting. So Rashi is saying something interesting, and Rebbe Yoshev makes this point. Rashi is saying that the issue with the ner shel cheres is do not have this disgusting candle inside the sukkah if it's a small sukkah. But this, of course, begs the question. If I'm talking about a small sukkah versus, I'm talking about, something that's disgusting, what difference does it make if it's a small sukkah or a large sukkah? Disgusting is disgusting, right? What difference does it make if the sukkah is big or small? So apparently, you have to say something along the lines of that it's disgusting kind of, sort of, a little bit, mostly, but if we're honest, it's not so fully disgusting. People use candles again and again all the time, but you just don't want to be looking at it all the time. You don't want to be staring at it. So if it's a small sukkah, it's not a concern, according to Rashi, that it's going to, the concern is not that it's going to burn your sukkah down. For Rashi, the concern is that it's a small thing in a small area, and it's kind of yucky, and you're looking at this yucky thing, and that's not right in the sukkah. That's Rashi. This is puzzling because then you're sitting in the dark. So the restraint of a bothered by that kasha, if there's no candle, how are you sitting there? So the answer is you have a candle. It's just not in the sukkah. You keep the candle out of the sukkah and it illuminates inside. Right? The Mishnah Berurah makes this point, by the way, beferish. I think I asked you to look at some of the Mishnah Berurahs. Mishnah makes this point beferish. We're talking about, of course, you're not sitting in the dark. Right. That's an excellent point. So the Gemara says that there's a difference that the candle can be in a large sukkah, not in the small sukkah. Zok Taisvis. The Amri lo Bamri Metzalto. Tosis writes, Ein Shragam in Yonada Acherim. Candle is different than everything else. Demonet de Michla Bamri Metzalto, Hainu B'shasha Ein Mishtamish Behen. The B'shasa Uda Ochel, the Ka'ara B'suka. Now, Tosfos says, when it comes to the plate, so the plate, of course, can be in the sukkah when you're eating, b'shasa uda. That's not a question. The issue of the candle is that even when you're using it, it should not be in the sukkah. Aval shraga, but the candle, but odo dolek o mishtamesh lo la'oro aser. The Gemara basically says that on the last day of Sukkot. Now, the last day of Sukkot for Eretz Yisrael people is Hoshana Rabbah. You're not allowed to knock down your sukkah on Hoshana Rabbah because you might need the sukkah later in the day. Right? Let's say it's half an hour. I don't know why, I always get hungry right at the end of Hoshana Rabbah, no? It's like a thing. So you can get hungry at the end of Hoshana Rabbah. You're going to have to go into the sukkah. You have to be in the sukkah. So therefore, don't get rid of your sukkah. Don't destroy your sukkah because you might end up having to use the sukkah. But what you should do is, the Gemara says, take the kelim. What you should do is you take the kelim and you take the kelim out of the sukkah for the covet of the next yontiv. Va'aminan the Gemara. Ein lo mokam laharid kelim. V'tzarech lecho ba b'yom tov ha'achron maya'aseh. Right, the Gemara says that at the end of Hoshana Rabbah, I'm supposed to take my kelim from the sukkah, bring it into the house. It's the cover of the next yontiv of Shmini Atzeres that I have my kelim in the house, the kelim the covered yontiv, etc. The Gemara has a question though. What happens if I don't have a house? The only thing I have is a sukkah. So I'm going to have to eat in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Well, there's a problem. I shouldn't eat the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres because that would be batosif. Right? Again, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. Shmini Atzeres, right? For us in Chutzlats, we eat in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. And if we don't, we're supposed to. But the idea is that Shmini Atzeres, you definitely don't sit in the sukkah. I don't sit in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. I'm supposed to eat at home. But let's say I don't have a home to eat in. So what do I do? So the Gemara says, V'amin the Gemara, Ein lo mokah in l'harid keli, v'tzach lecho ba b'yom tov ha'achrin ma'yas. If you don't have a house to put the kelim into, and you have to eat in the sukkah and yantav achrin, what do you do? To show that you're not violating Baal Tosef, what do I do to show that it's not Baal Tosef? I'm not adding an extra day of the sukkah. Right? It would be Baal Tosef, lasso sukkah shmuni yamin. So the Gemara says, mad l'kba es haner, I light the candle. Umei d'choshev la hekeir b'shaz hadlaka, shema minna d'asr b'chag. Right? The Gemara says that the fact that lighting the candle shows that it's not a sukkah. Obviously, we're talking about a small sukkah, where our Gemara says you are not supposed to have a candle inside the sukkah. So if I want to show that it's not a sukkah, because I'm going to eat there on Shmini Atzeres, I light the candle. But the fact that the Gemara speaks about lighting the candle shows that the candle is lit. That's a Tosfos proof from this Gemara.
Why can't you just eat outside?
Why can't you just eat outside? So I think the idea is that either you don't really have an outside area to eat, Again, we have to be creative. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they don't just eat outside. The only place they have to eat is their sukkah. They don't have a house. They are homeless people. This is on a roof. Okay, but there's probably some other space. Like, you can probably go down.
Also, if you're on a roof, then Jasmine, questions.
I don't know the answer. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Jasmine.
I was say also, even if your sukkah is on a roof, that implies that there is a house that you have access to on which the sukkah is on top of.
Probably. I don't know the answer to this question. It is it's a good question. But let's just accept it as a given. The given is you have no other place to eat. And the given is I have to show that my sukkah is not l'shem mitzvah. So what I do is I light a candle. And I light the candle inside the sukkah, inside the small sukkah. And the candle is burning then, but that's megala. That shows that this is not a sukkah shel mitzvah. And Tosis explains that since it's a sukkah katana, and usually there's a fear that the sukkah is going to burn down, so that's why the concern is that even a lit candle should not be inside the sukkah.
So, if this is serious about Baal Tosif, like, I can't imagine this is really that serious, because you might have Shabbos, Shmini Atzeres, and then if it's serious Baal Tosif, then this heker doesn't work. I don't know. I'm not really buying it.
So the Gemara says also that there are additional things that you could do in terms of, like, putting kalim in the sukkah, etc. Like, if it on the Shabbos, obviously you can't light the candle. But the point is, it's a real iser of Baal Tosif, and I have to do something to demonstrate that the sukkah is not a real sukkah. So what I do is I have my candle inside the sukkah. Right? So obviously that shows that the candle is lit and the candle is now inside the sukkah, and that shows the sukkah is not a good sukkah. Well, here's the problem. Why should my candle not be in the sukkah? Small sukkah. Candle's not in the sukkah because it's going to burn down. Shmini Atzeres, I need my candle in the small sukkah because it shows the sukkah's puzzle. But whoa! That means that what? You have a mitzvah to burn down your sukkah on Shmini Atzeres? But this is a chumrah I've never heard of. Right? What exactly is going on over here? If there's a concern, the sukkah is going to burn down. So how can it be that I have my lit candle in a small sukkah? So it's Shmini Atzeres. Whoopee the duda. Who cares that it's Shmini Atzeres, right? You're not supposed to have your sukkah burned down on sukkahs. You shouldn't have your sukkah burned down on Shmini Atzeres. What exactly is the issue? So there is one way of looking at this called the halachic man way, which is as follows. Ready? Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests this. Having a candle in the small sukkah is not definitely going to burn down the small sukkah. But there's a suffix, it might burn it down. And my concern is not that my sukkah is going to burn down, per se. My concern is that if my sukkah burns down, I won't be able to be mekayim in the midst of sukkah. This is halachic man speaking. But in Shmini Atzeres, if my sukkah burns down, who cares? Right? I don't really have a mitzvah to be in that sukkah. So let it burn down. Right? Let it burn, baby. Right? Like, who cares? That's the basic idea. Yeah, I find this svara a little bit over halachic. I'm not 100% sure what the real answer is, but the mahalach is not crazy. The fact is, I'm not really worried the sukkah is going to burn down. It's just like a suffix rahok, and because it's a suffix, so on Shmini Atzeres, I'm not nervous about that suffix. Do any of you have a better suggestion for this?
Does it avoid the issue of Baal Tosif if you burn it down?
Yeah, because then I'm not sitting in the sukkah, right? In other words, this is from burning the sukkah
down. Yes, it's really nailing down that it's not Baal Tosif.
Tanya's question, how can people make Kiddush in the sukkah the last day if it's really a concern about... Remember, whoa, so let's go slowly. This Gemara is from about in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, we don't sit in the sukkah at all the last day. You're thinking about making Kiddush in the sukkah the last day, right? That's a chutz la'aretz issue. May ikar hadin, we are supposed to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres in chutz la'aretz. Right? The Gemara says, Okay.
But wait, don't the last day you don't make a bracha and you just make a mizonos or something for Kiddush? And how come that's not Baal Tosif?
So it's not Baal Tosif because for those of us in Kutzla Eretz, the last day, the Shemini Atzeres day, is a suffix. Maybe it is Yontiv. Maybe it's still Sukkis. Because it's fake of the Yoma, just like day two of Yontiv is a suffix of day one. So day eight is a suffix of day seven. So I sit in the sukkah, but I don't make a bracha because out suffix, I don't make a bracha. Right? Now, again, the Baalei HaTaisis work very hard on some of these questions. If you assume Shemini Atzeres is really, again, for people in Chutz La'aretz, if you assume Shemini Atzeres is really a suffix, how come, right? And the Gemara says you sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres in Chutz La'aretz. So how come we don't shake lulav on Shemini Atzeres and Chutz La'aretz? You are supposed to sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. That's the din in the Gemara. It happens that the practice developed, me'ez siba shehi, based on Hasidim or whatever, that maybe people do not sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. It's a difficult practice. The Pashtus is against the Gemara. Dr. Chaim Salvechik always used to point out that there's one sheet on the Rishonim in the Sefer. And one of the Koinemises has a Sefer, Yichusei Tanoim Bamaroim. So he has a different gear in the Gemara that maybe you're not supposed to sit in the sukkah and Shemini Atzeres at all in Chutz La'aretz. The minig in Hasidic communities is that they don't sit in the sukkah and Shemini Atzeres, but Pashtus is against the Gemara. The Gemara says that you should. Some people have a practice like a compromise practice. I think that's what Tanya is referring to. And Shemini Atzeres, what they do is they kind of send the sukkah surf a little bit, meaning they make kiddush in the sukkah and they eat at home. Right? But that's like a compromise position. The real din is you're supposed to be in the sukkah, Shemini Atzeres. Oh, yes, Dr. Gottman. I just gave you smicha, by the way.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that that's all it took. I was just for the sukkah katana. Why are we so sure the reason why it's a sukkah katana, not a gadol, is because we're nervous about burning down?
Why is it that we're nervous about burning down?
Or why is that the reason? Maybe it's katana because we don't want to be near the gross waxen.
Yeah, so that's what we wanted to say the Pshat and Rashi is, that you want to not be near discussing stuff.
I didn't realize
the
that.
The Tosfos says, right, the four lines in the bottom of this Tosfos. Tosfos says, by a sukkah katana, chayshin and shemati sarev sukaso. And Taisa says, Beferish, the concern is that the sukkah is going to burn down. So then I have a question. If I'm nervous the sukkah is going to burn down, what about on Shemini Atzeres? So you have to say that for some reason, Shemini Atzeres, I'm not nervous that the sukkah is going to burn down. Okay, let's go on.
I had another question. On the Yom Tov candles, we do light those in the sukkah.
We light Yontif candles in the sukkah. So there are different practices about lighting Yontif candles in the sukkah or not. May Ikar Hadin, Shabbos candles, Yontif candles should be lit where I eat. The only thing is that sometimes people are scared to light their candles in the sukkah. If you have your silver leichter and they're going to be in a sukkah in Washington Heights, as much as we love the community, but there probably is some concern that people might come and steal your silver leichter, right? So many women, my mother used to do this, they would light in the sukkah, then we would carry the candles in the house after she lit the candles. The Pashtus says it's not proper. The Pashtus, again, you could defend it like with some halachic gymnastics, but the Pashtus is that you're supposed to light candles where you eat. Reb Nissen Karelitz is quoted in the Dershim Mishnah Berurah saying that if you're really nervous that the candles will be stolen or something, so make sure at least you leave one candle in the sukkah. So at least you're mekayim the mitzvah of hadlakas neres properly with that one candle. But you should probably not just light the candles and then leave the sukkah. That's really not proper because you're supposed to eat. The reason why we light Shabbos candles, Yom Tov candles by the table is because you're supposed to get Hana'ah from the candles. And the way you get Hana'ah from candles is that you eat Lo'er Haner. Okay? It enhances, like Ramosha Feinstein writes, the having candles enhances the decorum of the Shabbos meal. Many poskim are nervous, or Schefter is nervous, that maybe you shouldn't light candles at all when there are lights on at home, because the candles don't enhance anything. They don't add any additional light. So if Schefter quotes Rav Salvechik used to turn off all the lights, and they would light candles then, and on the second day of Yontif, the lights are on anyway, Rav Schefter would not light candles, or his wife doesn't light candles on second day Yontif, because the lights are on anyway, it doesn't add anything. Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted in all of these Svarim that you should light candles even though the lights are on, because it enhances the decorum or the sense of the aesthetics of the meal. It's a candlelit dinner is still a thing. Okay? So that's the idea of Shabbos candles, that it changes the nature of the Seuda, Yontif candles as well. That's Rav Moshe's understanding. Okay. Be it as it may, we should learn more Gemara. Okay, Chevra, let's go on. Yardu Gishamin. If it starts to rain, you sit in the sukkah when it rains. Tana, Misha Tisrach HaMikvah Shel Grisim. The Braisa says that when, the Mishnah says that when it begins to rain, you're allowed to leave the sukkah when your porridge gets bad. And we're talking about porridge of Grisim, like a type of lentil porridge, which gets bad very easily. Once it begins to get bad, so then you're allowed to leave the sukkah. The simple reading of our Gemara is, like the Torah writes, that it has to be that you have porridge and it begins to get ruined by the rain. The Rambam, however, writes that it's not that you have porridge, it begins to get ruined. The Rambam writes that we assess. Were you to have, right, this is philosophy 101, were you to have porridge, would this amount of rain ruin your porridge? That's the way the Rambam learns. It's not based on in actuality that your porridge is getting ruined.
Do a lot of people agree with the Torah on that? That feels like a pretty weird way of thinking about it. Like, your sukkah isn't only kosher if you are in a place where there are strong enough winds, such that there are strong enough winds that could knock down your sukkah, but your sukkah doesn't get knocked down.
Right. So I don't think anyone really agrees with this Torah. In fact, the Beis Yosef tries to show that the Torah and the Rambam, I'm not really arguing, but the simple meaning of the Torah is that he says that Misha Tisrach HaMikvah means that the food has to actually get ruined. Now, the Lashon Yerushalmi writes that even if you don't have porridge, still you could leave the sukkah, but the tour, I think, is just like reading the words very literally. That the words say when the food gets ruined. Abaye. Abaye Abaka Yosef Tamid Rav Yosef and Metalta. Abaye is sitting in the presence of Rav Yosef in the sukkah. Noshav Zika Vaka Maisit Tzibusa. Wind blows and pieces of schach begin to fall down in the soup. My mother remembers as a girl that they would get schach from the area, now it's called JFK Airport, but it used to be called Idlewild Airport. And there's like big bulrushes. Any of you ever drove down Brookville Boulevard right over there, like the road that looks like it's a cow path between like the five towns and JFK? So they have like bulrushes. So people used to go and cut down the bulrushes and use that as schach, and the stuff used to fall into their soup all the time. So Rav Yosef is sitting in the sukkah, and the bulrushes are falling into his soup. So Amar Rav Yosef, panali mani mahacha. Rav Yosef says, get my kelim out of here. In other words, I'm leaving the sukkah. Amar Abaye, v'atzinam yishe tisrach ha-mikva. Abaye says, what do you mean? It says that when the porridge will get ruined, and the porridge is not getting ruined by these things, by these bulrushes that are falling. Amar lei l'didi kemen danid datoi. Rav Yosef said, well, I'm a anine hadas. I'm a very, usually use the word finicky. It has to be a very sensitive person, a type of person who gets bent out of shape easily. Rashi quotes the Gemara Pesachim, that there are three types of people that chayim eno chayim. Everything bothers them. Their whole life is like not living. Right? One of them is anine hadas. Like every little thing used to bother Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef is saying get the kelim out of the sukkah because it's like mishatzishach hamikvah for me, meaning you get the impression that it is subjective. A person could decide, this bothers me, and therefore I'm leaving the sukkah. For other people, it doesn't bother you. That's what some say, by Chabad, they sit in the sukkah even though it's pouring rain. And everyone asks, like, what the heck are they doing? The Gemara says, it rains, you don't sit in the sukkah. So the story is that the Rebbe was apparently one time in the sukkah, it's pouring rain, and the Rebbe just kept on going. So, oh, the Rebbe did it. So I know the pshat, by the way. I'll tell you the pshat. Why did the Rebbe stay in the sukkah? The Rebbe was on a different planet. The Rebbe, like, he would, like, focus out. My guess is he didn't realize that it was pouring rain. He's sitting there, and he's saying his Torah, and, like, it's anina datoi. It depends on who you are. It's like a subjective thing in both directions. So for the Rebbe, the pouring rain doesn't bother him. Right? Most people do get bothered by the rain. Right? It goes in the other direction also. For Rav Yosef, he gets bothered more easily than others. That, I think, is the pshat in this Gemara. It's completely subjective. Tani Rabbanan. That makes sense. He's blind, so he's very sensory. That's a very good point, actually. Right? In other words, Rav Yosef had, like, blind people have, like, a more developed sense of smell, etc. So he had a more developed sense of, I don't know, he didn't like bulrushes as much as everyone else likes them, I guess, because he was blind. Okay. Let's say you're eating in the sukkah, begins to rain and you leave the sukkah. You don't have to go back in. I'm sure you've all had this experience. Now you're sitting in the sukkah, it comes, it begins to rain, you begin to take the stuff out, and then suddenly, beautiful blue sky, gorgeous. Right? You don't have to go back into the sukkah. Once you left, you we're not matriach you to go back in. You get an impression from this lashon of ein matriach, and also that we don't force you to do it. If you want to do it, okay. Hayyoshin tachas hasukkah, v'yar dugashamin. I don't understand this lashon of tachas hasukkah exactly, but you're sweeping in the sukkah, and it begins to rain, v'yarad, and you leave the sukkah. We don't force you to go back. Now that word sheyar, well, if he's blind, it's probably not chayiv. Though we paskin that blind people are chayiv in all mitzvos, right? There was an opinion that sumas pater min hamitzvos, but that opinion probably assumes that a suma has the same level of chayiv and mitzvos like women have. There's only pater from mitzvos that say shasman grama. Right? The argument that a blind person is not chayiv in mitzvos, first of all, we don't pass like that, actually.
Wouldn't this be like a mitzvah
to say shazman grama? It is a mitzvah to say shazman grama, but we don't pass like that opinion that a suma is put from say shazman grama. There's, I believe there's one Rishon, Rabbeinu Yeruchim paskins like that opinion that suma is put from mitzvahs, which means mitzvah to say shazman grama. We don't pass like that. We assume that blind people are chayiv in all mitzvos. There's certain mitzvahs that you have to see, so you can't do, obviously. But blind people are chayiv in mitzvos, yeah.
I just taught this summer with Rav Yosef saying, before I heard with Gadolsha, I was so happy. And then, I heard, so he's like really has stakes in that machlokas.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because he's blind. Right? That's exactly the point. Yeah.
No, to speak to Tova, he's like, wait, I really want
to. That's the Gemara I was thinking of. I think I remembered the wrong Maskana. So I was like, he's like a woman. But I guess he's not.
No, it goes with. We'll talk later.
Well, let's say I'm sitting in the sukkah and it begins to rain, so I don't have to go back in. If I take my food out, I don't have to go back in. If I'm sweeping and it begins to rain, so you don't have to go back into sukkah. Ad sheyar. Ad sheyar. Let's just take that word as it is. And the guy has a question. Ibaynu ad sheyar. Oh, ad sheyar. Is it sheyar with an ayin? Is it sheyar with an aleph? She'ar with an ayin means you wake up. She'ar with an aleph means it is light. Tashma, So the Gemara has a raya. Toshma. Right, we have a raya that ye'ar means light because it says ye'ar, there is light. And then ya'ala amud hashachar, the morning star comes up. So the Gemara asks, tarti. Those two things contradict each other. Because ye'ar means real light. That is after amud hashachar. Amud hashachar is the earliest tiny bit of that star far away. It's ye'ar means it's really getting light. So Gemara says there's a stira. Tarti, there's a stira. Because is it ye'ar with an, is it real light? And it doesn't mean until you wake up. The ayin approach is rejected. But, so it means with an aleph. But if it means with an aleph, we still have a contradiction. Because on the one hand, it says, ya'ala amud hashachar. On the other hand, it says, she'ar, it's going to be light. So, ela ema, ad she'ar, bi'ala amud hashachar. Rather, Zafi Gemara, if you have the ayin, it makes sense. Meaning the ayin approach is saying, right, in order to, what's it called? In order to be exempt, it has to be she'ar, that you woke up, and ya'ala amud hashachar, and the morning star came up. Meaning, if you wake up and it is not yet light, it's not yet amud hashachar, stay at home. If it is amud hashachar, but you're still sleeping, your neighbor does not have to like start shaking you, go into the sukkah, it's amud hashachar, go, go, go. You don't have to do that. Let the guy sleep. Right? It has to be both. Actually, or viya'ala amud hashachar. Good? Let's go on in the Gemara. Mashallah davadome. Right, so the Mishnah tells us that this case is comparable to a situation that a servant pours a cup of wine for the master, and the cup is thrown on his face. Now, this is what my ninth grade English teacher would say. The pronoun has to match the antecedent. Like, whose face gets thrown at? Right? That's the question. So, Ibayilahu. That's a great shayla. Mi shafach lo mi. Who's pouring to whom? Tashma. Titanya. Shafach lo rabo kiton alpanov. Va'amar lo I afshar b'shimusheich. Right? The Braisa says that the master is pouring the cup on the servant and saying, I don't want you to serve me. There are two ways of saying it. Both are bad. One way of saying is that the servant is being very chutzpahdik and like, boom, throwing it at the master. The other way of saying is that the master is throwing it at the servant. The master says, I'm not interested in your mitzvahs. I'm not interested in you serving me. The Gemara says that the second approach is the approach that is more accepted. Right? That the Ribbono Shel Olam is pouring the water on us. Ribbono Shel Olam is making it rain, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I don't want you to serve me. I don't want your mitzvah sitting in the sukkah, so if I'm making it rain. Hello, Dr. Gutman, recently minted.
Recently christened, yeah, Dr. Gutman.
Judaized.
Yeah, sorry. Right. We don't usually ask, how's your Christianity at the beginning of this year? That would be weird. I was just trying to figure out if it's the first approach with the servant throwing at the master.
Yes. You
know, we were trying to understand the rain is not being caused by human beings saying God is making the rain fall down. So like master, how are we?
So I think the idea is that the servant is doing bad service to the master, and therefore the servant is doing bad service to the master, and the rain shows, listen, Chevra, your service is no good. It's very similar.
Yeah.
Approach one and approach two are both very similar. One approach is saying that the rain shows your service is not good. The other approach is saying, get out of here, you're doing bad service. Right, Eiv Shabbishimu Sheikh is like, it's a stronger statement. It's saying get lost. That I don't see any large difference between these two perushim. Weiter, Tanya Rabbanan. Bisman Shacham Alok. Okay, so now what we're going to be discussing now are solar eclipses. Solar eclipses are a reality that happens in this planet, effectively when the Earth is over here and the Sun is over here, and the Moon somehow ends up between the Earth and the Sun. So the Moon prevents the sunlight from hitting Earth. This is solar eclipses as shown in finger things. It's a real thing. You know that the Moon and the Sun both move. Theoretically speaking, we should have a solar eclipse once a month, because once a month the Moon is, right, blocking it. But the thing is that there's an angle of declination or something of like 5 degrees. So it's always off. Always in the sense of most of the time, the Sun and the Moon are not completely lined up because they're at different angles. It's like this is here and this is here. They're at different angles. So it doesn't block each other. Even though they're in the same place. They're both at the 50-yard line, but one is higher, one is lower. A solar eclipse is that the Moon makes it that the Sun doesn't shine on Earth. There's a lot of articles on solar eclipses in Halacha. I have over here the Chakira Journal from fall of 2017. In fall of 2017, there was a massive solar eclipse. August 21st of 2017, there's a solar eclipse that basically went across the United States. Millions of people got it. It began at 10:18 in Oregon, and then it finished in Charlotte at 1:16 p.m., and it goes all the way across the country. There are many places that were completely eclipsed. It's the middle of the day, and it's Choshech Lafeila. It's absolutely pitch black night. If you remember, there's a famous picture of Donald Trump outside on the, Dr. Gutman saw this. Okay. So there's a famous picture of Donald Trump outside on like the porch in the White House, and he's like staring at the, you're not supposed to do that, no? People know what I'm talking about, this famous picture? Okay. But I'm not showing my political leanings in any way. I'm just saying like facts. This is just facts.
So we learned that in kindergarten.
That you're not supposed to look at. Right. I mean, I made like, I used a colander with my kids, and like you make pinholes in it so that you could like see it not directly. It's bad for your eyesight, but some people have, whatever, has such marvelous eyesight. They're so perfect, everything, that even staring at the Sun won't hurt their eyes. I don't know. Maybe that's the pshat. Don't know. Okay. Tanya Rabbanan. Bisman shacham aloka. When there is a solar eclipse, simin ra l'chala olam kulo, is a bad sign for the entire world. Mashal l'ma adav radome, it's similar to a case of melech basar v'dam sh'asas u'udar l'avodav. The king makes a meal and he puts a lantern in front of them. Klas aleihem, he gets angry. Right, the master gets angry. Says, "Take the lantern away, so that they'll be dark." So here also, we're saying, "Take that lantern away, take the sun away, so it's going to be dark." Now, many of the mefarshim, the Aruch Hanan actually has a very nice write up on this piece of Gemara. The Rav Hanan says that many people use this piece of Gemara to make fun of the rabbis. They say, "Rabbis, what are you telling me that a solar eclipse is a sign of bad things that comes because of this aveira, that aveira, etc.?" We all know that solar eclipses are natural phenomena. The Ribbono Shel Olam made the world in a way that the sun and the moon spin around and the earth spins and everything is spinning and there's going to be a solar eclipse and this time and I can predict it. So how can you tell me it's like a bad sign? It's like something that shows like it's a bad omen. It shows you're doing averos, as the Gemara is going to say, what's going on? So the Aruch Haner points out a nice diuk in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Bizman shacham aloka, at the time when it happens. Meaning there is a designated time when it's going to happen. But the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he created the universe, he predicted that at these times, when the solar eclipse is going to happen, at these times, that will mean that people are doing this and this and that Avera, and that's what leads to the solar eclipse at that time. Leads in the sense of in the Ribbono Shel Olam's mind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in a way that the solar eclipse will happen on this day at this time. And that's because Ribbono Shel Olam knows that this day at this time, there are going to be X, Y, and Z Averis that are happening. That's the way the Aruch HaNer takes it. The Maharal of Prague has a different approach. Maharal says that the Ribbono Shel Olam knows that people are going to do Averis. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam set up the sun and the moon in a way that there have to be eclipses. If there be no Averis that would ever be done, so then the sun and the moon would never eclipse. Now, apparently this is not possible. I see Rachel's already beginning to think like when this is possible. It would only be possible, apparently, if the sun and the moon are 90 degrees away from each other. That's the only way they'll never intersect. Well, if that would happen, so then I think that can't happen. In his article, Erica Brown's husband is the one, Jeremy Brown. He's like into these types of things. But you have to have a moon and you have to have a sun. Right now there's a 5-degree angle, so that's why we have eclipses, really. If it's a 20-degree angle, we'd have eclipses less often, right? The only way there'd be no eclipses is if the imaginary sign-free universe would be for this moon to orbit at 90 degrees to the sun-earth axis. Then the moon would never come between the sun and the earth. There would never be an eclipse. However, this would cause another problem. If this would exist, that the moon is always at 90 degrees, then the moon would always be visible, and you can never have Rosh Chodesh. That's, again, I don't know anything about this type of astronomy or whatever. Last night I read this article just because I remembered it existed, and I was like trying to pray it a little bit for the share. Anyone know this is true, that there would be no Rosh Chodesh if the moon is a 90-degree thing?
We've had a secret WhatsApp that you're not in, and I sent the article out on that. So,
are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay.
I think this is not my strong point.
Yeah, mine either. But that's cool that you knew about this article. Well, I'm impressed. So, did you also like see the part of the article where he discusses that maybe Hachamaloka doesn't mean that there's a solar eclipse, but it means that there are sunspots?
Right, yeah.
And the problem is that sunspots are not visible to the naked eye. So Chazal could not have known about sunspots. But maybe there are people, there are some Chinese astronomers who knew sunspots long before Galileo, although Galileo claimed, he deals with this stuff. Okay, so let's go on in the Gemara. Tanya, third wide line. Remeir Omer, Kozman Shema Oras Lokin, Simin Ravason Eyem Shal Yisrael. When the celestial bodies are eclipsed, that's a bad sign for the enemies of the Jews. Because they, meaning that anything bad that happens in the world, Klal Yisrael has to be nervous about. In this Gemara and in many Gemaras, the word Sonein Shal Yisrael means the Jews. It doesn't mean Jews' enemies. If there are bad things that happen, but whenever there are celestial events, so this is bad for the Jews, because the Goyim are going to think that the Jews are causing it, and therefore they're going to go out and beat up those Jews who caused the eclipse. Now, if you think I'm making this up, this probably actually happened, right? So that's the idea that this Gemara says. The teacher comes to school, the teacher is holding the whip. Who's scared of the teacher with the whip? Misha Ragil lo kos b'chol yom v'yom hu do'eg. The one who always gets hit, right, of the whole class, right? The teacher comes in with the whip. Who's the most frightened? Jimmy. Why? Because Jimmy gets whipped every day, and Jimmy knows he's going to be whipped again. Right? So the Jewish people also, they have to be scared because they get whipped all the time. That's what the Gemara says. Tan Rabban. Bizman shacham aloka simin ra'al obdek l'chavim. Levon aloka simin ra'al sonen shal Yisrael. When there's a solar eclipse, that's bad for the goyim. When there's a lunar eclipse, it's bad for the Jews. Jews are compared to the moon. Jews calculate time through the moon, goyim through the sun. If the indentation, if it's a not complete eclipse, so then it's going to be part that is non-eclipsed. So if that is in the east, so then it's bad for the east. If it's in the west, it's bad for those in the west. But I'm sorry, here's the olam kulo. Panav domin ladam. If it looks red, right, it's chayav bala olam. There are different types of lunar eclipses. What's the red one? It's like the August moon. It's the harvest moon or something. Is that the red one? Okay, whatever. If it's reddish, then it says that there's going to be cherep ala olam. Lesak, if it's like a sack, meaning it looks like, what's it called? Notes of Shoizim, the goat hair, right? It looks black. That says chitze rabban olam. That means a famine is coming. Lezu, lezu, cherep v'chitze rabban olam. If it if the eclipse happens when it's near the evening, that means that it's going to come later on. Some say it's the opposite. I don't understand any of this. There's no nation that gets punished, and the Avodah Zarah of that nation also gets punished. When Klai Yisrael does what Hashem wants, we're not scared of anything. Right? Ribbono Hashem tells you that don't learn from the Goyim. You should not be scared. The goyim should be scared. You should not be scared. Hello, Tanya.
Yeah, so I feel like I want to hear this from you because I don't know how, what to make of this. So this is Torah Shebal Peh. This is Torah. And as we're reading this, I'm kind of like, eh. And I just like, how do you make sense of this?
Say it like this. It's a hard question. I'm kind of reading this Gemara very quickly, and I said I don't understand the word of it, which is actually true. I do believe that there are some deeper lessons, but I don't know what they are. Whether these deeper lessons, like Kabbalah stuff or Machshava stuff, or, you know, this is stuff, I just don't know it. I believe that it's there. Did I tell you this? When Rabbi Moshe Tendler became the Rav of the Great Neck Synagogue, here's the founding rabbi of the Great Neck Synagogue. So his father, Rav Moshe Feinstein, told him, and when you give shiurim, you have to make sure not to skip any bit of agadata and to work as hard as you can to explain every bit of agadata. In Rav Moshe's words, the balabatim will appreciate the energy you put in to understanding an agadata. They all have questions. If they think the agadata is silly, they won't believe in the power of chazal, etc. He's 100% right, but I didn't do it. I didn't invest the time. I wouldn't know what to do. I don't know how to make heads or tails out of this Gemara. Okay.
That's actually very affirming. Thank you.
Go ahead. Six lines from the bottom. Tan Rabbanan. Bishro arba devarim chama loka. You have solar eclipses for four averos. Al av bezin shemeis ve'en on nisbay ka'alocha. Okay, if the head of the bezin dies and you don't give him proper eulogy, if you have a Naira Hamurasa who screams out, no one saves her. Mishka Zachor, if you have male homosexuality, shenishbach daman ke'echad. And if you have two brothers who are killed together. So these are the four type of sins that lead to solar eclipses. What does this have to do with anything? So Rashi writes, I have no idea. No? Rashi writes, b'shul dala devarim, lo shamati tam bedavar. Rashi says, I did not hear any explanation as to why. The Arech Luner has the following suggestion. He says, an av bezdin shemes, because the Talmid HaChachamim are called Ma'ure Yisrael, they shall light. When the Talmid HaChacham dies and you don't give him a proper hesped, that means that the light was extinguished and there's no light to continue, so therefore there's an eclipse. Naira HaMuresh Shetzaka Be'ir, says the Arech Luner, these things happen at night. It can't be that there's like a rape that goes on and no one hears her. Like, why you saw that when it's happened? Obviously, what happened is it's late at night. And that's why it happened. But because people are using the darkness to do improper things, so the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to speak, makes it dark improperly to almost protest what they did. Then he goes on, Mishkav Zachor. Mishkav Zachor is because Chazal say, Zachor from there, that the Mabel happened because the Dar HaMabel were engaged in male homosexuality. That when the Mabel happened, so the Torah says, Old Ko Yameho Aret, Zara Kotir Chom Yom Valayla Lo Yishbosu, during the Mabel, day and night didn't exist. So the Ribbono Shel Olam to protest that thing which led to day and night not existing, to protest male homosexuality, what the Ribbono Shel Olam does is he makes the sun not shine to go back to the Dar HaMabel. Ashnei Achim Shenishbach Domen Ke'echad, the Aruch Lanier says, based on the Medrash, that if you remember, Yaakov Avinu is about to be buried, and Esav comes and he protests, the Medrash says, he says, this is my spot in Maris HaMachpela, how come you're putting him in? And everyone is like engaging him, and Chushim Ben Dan is like deaf, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he just goes and he knocks off Esav's head, and Esav's head rolls and is in Maris HaMachpela, etc. That's a story that we all learned in nursery school. By the way, I don't know why they teach us these stories in nursery school, but then again, I don't know why we teach the Brothers Grimm to kids that age. It's also not that healthy, but that is a different, it's a different Musar Shmooz. Okay, but the point...
I talked about the Brothers Grimm at my Shal Shodesh share this week, so you missed out.
Oh, I did miss out. What does that prove, Rabbeinu Hirsch?
I'll fill you in later.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, but the point is that Chushim ben Dan kills Esav. Now, the Torah writes, Loma Eshkal Agam Shnechem Yom Echa, that Rivka had this sense that they would both die the same day. Yaakov Avinu, when he overcame Esav, when he bought the Bechora, the Torah uses a lashon Michra Chayom as Bechoras Chali. Yom means light. So Yaakov overcoming Esav is the victory of light over darkness. When two people die the same day, so that is reflective of the Yaakov and Esav situation. And then that Yom that should have occurred by Yaakov overcoming Esav, that Yom was darkened. And that, the Aruch Lanier says, is the pshat in why two brothers being killed the same day is one of the causes of a solar eclipse. Now, if you're asking me, do I understand what I am saying? No, not exactly, but I'm doing the best I can. Okay, let's go on. Bishvil arba devarim ma'oros lokin. There are four things that all of the celestial bodies are lokin. Al kosve plaster. These are people who write, kosve plaster means they write false documents, no? Ami ide ede sheker. V'amigadli behem adaka be'eretz Yisrael. V'akotze ilanos tovos. Basically, these are all four different types of stealing. When things are stolen, so Ribbono Shel Olam says the ma'oros, the moon and the stars, which are the things that keep time, which are the things that keep things going the way they should go. That's what time is. If you steal, you're making things go improperly. So Ribono Shel Olam says, Ma'oris will be loken based on that. There are four things that make your stuff be handed over to the authorities, to the government. If you retain a paid up document and you're going to use it to collect again. And if you lend with interest. And if you could have protested, but you didn't. So on all these things, so the halacha, on all these things, this is what causes you to lose money. You're trying to profit improperly. You're trying to keep a shtar around to collect from it. You're trying to collect interest, etc. You should protest and you don't protest. This means that all of your property will be yorid l'timayon, will be lost. And the other thing is if you publicly promise stucca and you don't give it. There are four things that the possessions of Balabatim, again, goes to Timayon. It gets all swallowed up. They don't pay their babysitters. Oshke Schar Sachir. Kovshe Schar Sachir means that you deny it. Oshek means that you steal it entirely. Kovesh is just that you delay, I should say. Oshek means that you never give it. Vashar Parkin Ol Me'at Zavarehen. And those people have responsibility, they don't do it. V'nosen Al Chavarehen. They dump the responsibilities on their friends. V'algasas Haruach. And Gasas Haruach also, if you're haughty, if you're arrogant, that's what causes you to lose your money. So arrogance is worse than all those. Being humble, the opposite of arrogance, that is about humility. It says, you'll get the land. Meaning to say, arrogance causes one to lose property. But anava is anavim yeshu aretz. Hadron alacha yashin. We finished the second parak of Shavuos. Humility relates to the themes of Sukkos. Exactly. humility relates to the themes of Sukkos. Right. Sukkah shows that our dwelling is temporary. It shows we only rely on the Ribono Shel Olam. We can't be arrogant. Yeah, 100%. Okay, so Chevra. It's been, I think, almost 3 years that we've been learning together, which is a long time. And I feel sad that, like, this year is ending because I really enjoyed it. But at the same time, like I mentioned a couple of years ago, I just feel like it's better for me and for my family to, like, not spend evening time giving a Zoom share as much as I enjoy it. But I hope that we'll all stay in touch some way, another, carrier pigeons, owls, whatever is a good method of communication. Apparently there are owls in Fort Tryon Park. Okay, just a thing. But again, I hope you continue to learn. I think one of the important things for clients on this generation is that we need women who are seriously engaging in Talmud Torah. Some of my students in Stern complained, and this is one of the reasons why I got involved in saying shiurim for women. They complained that, like, whenever they hear shiurim, like, people talking down to them. And I think there is something about learning eon and raising yourselves and learning to the best of your ability. That's really important. Unfortunately, there are not enough places on this planet where women can go to learn the Eon and to really grow in their understanding of Dvar Hashem and to really develop to Melumados, to the people that Klai Yisrael needs. I really enjoyed this experience and I hope that we stay in touch, and that I should continue to learn, you should continue to learn, and hatzlacha to one and to all. Thank you. Thank you for being part of this. Okay, Chevra, have a good night.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz.
Thank you.
Thank you.